Welcome back to another episode of the Untalented Podcast.
Woo!
We're here with Mel
Esarbegi.
I didn't want to butcher that last name. It's so beautiful.
Is it Mel? Do we go Mel?
Yeah.
I go Mel, Melissa, yeah. Both.
Melski.
Yeah. Melski.
That's new. I'm into that. That's
a new Melski. Love that. And you are a trends forecaster, ethnographic researcher.
I'm a woman of many talents. I'm still discovering. Yeah. So, like, I identify as a creative strategist, a creative researcher, a speaker, a futures consultant.
Get you a girl that can do everything.
Yeah. Everything's fun when you call it research.
Love that. And today we're just going to chat about futures and
strategy.
What on earth is.
Yeah.
Strategy and
whatever those words mean.
Yeah. You know? All those buzzwords. But yes, let's start off with a little bit of an icebreaker that we do with every guest who comes on the podcast.
We have actually personalized this towards
you.
Or what we think, hopefully this, not that it's offensive, but we just did some like funny ones that we think you might like.
Okay.
But that we aren't trying to like, presume.
I'm not easily offended.
Okay, cool.
So,
cool.
And I'm honored that it's like slightly personal.
Yeah, we were like, we needed to do something different for you because sometimes they're a bit like vanilla.
Yeah, and you are far from vanilla.
Oh, spice.
Okay, let's go. AR or VR?
AR.
Solomon's or Merrill's?
I don't know what Merrill's are, so Solomon's.
Oh my god, they're so great for summer.
Okay, so we'll go shopping.
Yeah, we'll go shopping.
They're kind of like Solomon's, but like people wear them more for the actual activity than they do fashion-wise, but they're coming.
It's like, you know how like rock climbing became trendy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's basically a brand that was associated with rock climbing, I think. They look like pebbles, but they're cool.
Oh, like
cool.
Bouldering. Yeah. You go next.
TikTok or Instagram?
I think they both have a time and a place.
Okay, fair enough.
Diplomatic answer. Nike or Adidas?
I'm not hot for either, which feels controversial.
Ooh, interesting.
I know.
Films or books?
Books.
Gucci or Prada?
Prada.
Night in or night out?
Again, time and place.
Wow. True.
Yeah. I love both.
Yeah. Cardi B or Megan Thee Stallion?
Ooh, Megan Thee Stallion. But Cardi B has contributed so much to culture, and I'm forever grateful and so happy that she has evolved her career in the ways that she has.
Mm. Love. Met Gala or the Oscars?
Neither.
I love.
This is what I thought was going to happen. Like, she's going to have her way. Okay.
I was like, I can play by the rules, but this is more fun.
This is more fun. Skill or fame?
Skill or fame? Skill.
Lead or follow?
Lead.
And this one, I was trying to be Canadian. Oh. Tim Hortons or McDonald's?
I really appreciate the effort. I think you really embraced North America at large.
I'd never heard of it.
I mean, in what context? Like food, coffee?
Where are your brain going?
Should we set the scene?
Yeah,
Okay. Paint
me a picture.
So
it's raining.
It's raining. Okay. It's 2 a.m. You're knackered. You've had a really big night out.
Uh-huh.
You feel nauseous. You just want to like get home, get in your gym jams, put your like comfy socks on.
Uh-huh.
And you have the option to go to either Tim Hortons or McDonald's.
McDonald's.
Okay.
Wow. So Tim Hortons is not really like a nighttime thing.
Okay.
And in North America, McDonald's has like a big breakfast offering.
Yeah.
So Tim Hortons is more like Greg's.
That's what I was trying to think of a way to explain it to Ellie, and I was like, it's kind of like you get coffee there, but you also get
donuts,
sandwiches.
Yeah, you could get the like I've never really dabbled in the sandwich offering.
Oh.
But if it's 2 a.m. and I'm cozy and I just want to feel something, McDonald's.
Like sandwiches generally.
I just want to feel.
I'm embarrassed to say I've moved to London 6 weeks ago and I've already had like 6 burgers.
Oh really?
Oh, yeah.
Where's your favorite burger been?
Currently it's Honest Burger.
Mm.
Oh my god, the Rosemary fries.
Mm. Mm.
So good.
I'm a smash burger enthusiast, and so I still have a lot of exploring to do.
Yeah.
Love.
I heard something about smash burgers the other day that it's not just a fad. If you smash a burger and flatten it, the edges caramelize.
They get lacy. It's delicious.
Lacy.
That's hilarious.
I was like, wow, I thought it was a fad.
Well, my favorite thing is fat. And so like the fat renders.
Same.
And it's so delicious.
Wow.
When people cut the fat off of the bacon, I'm like, there's something wrong with it.
There's another flavor.
What
Love that.
I like salty stuff. Okay, so let's move on to the actual run sheet. We basically have some questions prepared for you. Obviously, it'll be quite conversational, but I thought it'd be good to start off with just, you know, the one that we ask everyone who comes on the pod, which is, who was the first person to make you feel talented?
So I thought about this because my relationship with this industry and my career is that I felt very unnurtured.
Interesting.
I felt very unrecognized for what my skill sets were. And so I'd say that the first person who made me feel talented was my mother. Because she always really nurtured my creativity and my love of studying the world. But when I thought about it further, I wanted to share this concept that my friend Kareen Sarhane had introduced to me. And I think, like, everyone should approach life this way, where I have a board of directors of my life. And so they're different individuals that I consult with for the different ways I want to grow. And on that are three men that have helped me recognize my talent. So it's Matt DiPaola, who I met when I was working at Sidley. Paul Lawton, who I met on the internet, who's a sociology professor and founder of an agency called Sister Mercy. And then Nick Batminton, who is a world-renowned futurist. And so each of them helped me grow in these different ways. And they've nurtured my entrepreneurial spirit, my interest in creativity and strategy and insights.
I love that. That sounds like a pretty solid board.
Yeah. And there's more. Like, it's a bigger board. And, like, I have my spiritual side of the board. Yeah. I have, like, my, like, women that help me. And, like, it's fluid and interchangeable. But I love the fact that these people have been able to see me grow. Mm. And they've also allowed me to have a relationship with them where I can watch them grow. And so it's like they've seen me at my worst. And I've seen them in very different, difficult chapters as well. And so I recommend everyone kind of build their own board of directors, of people that you admire, that inspire you, that can kind of be a sounding board for you as you pursue whatever it is that speaks to you.
I love that. Mm. So the board of directors obviously understand what you do, but there's probably a lot of people, maybe even people listening, that don't quite understand what a creative strategist is, what a trend forecaster is. How would you best describe what you do despite having quite a few different roles in a few sentences?
Yeah, so I, like, my, like, elevator pitch is that I love to study culture and translate it for different stakeholders. And those stakeholders can be creative directors, they can be brand managers, they can be leaders in an organization. They all have different goals. Sometimes they need help concepting a campaign. Sometimes they want to deeply understand an industry or a persona, a group of people. And so I see myself as someone who can translate information in a way that's, like, palatable and fun and ultimately, like, inspire people to do something, whether that something is build or even, like, simply just connection. Like, a lot of my work often falls into doing workshops, which is a lot of fun because I'm helping teams collaborate and think outside of the box about whatever it is that the challenge at hand is.
Love that. And when did you know, at what point were you like, yep, this is what I want to do. This is for me.
So in university, that was when I, like, first felt validated in my interest of, like, loving pop culture. I grew up in an immigrant household, and so, like, watching TV and reading magazines was, like, how I felt like I could build connections with people. And in university was when I got to, like, legitimize that and intellectualize it. Mm. So I would, like, write essays about Twitter and the Arab Spring, or, like, talk about – I almost pursued a master's in Kim Kardashian, like, the cultural significance and impact of Kim Kardashian a decade ago.
That would have been so you.
So right? And so
– brilliant.
I regret not pursuing it, but at the time I was like, where is this going to lead me? And then – I felt like advertising and marketing and branding was a way that I could be academic and shape culture and study culture. And so I pursued that industry, but I never really fit in anywhere in Toronto. Like, I worked at digital shops and traditional shops and experience studios, and no one ever really knew what to do with me. So in 2020, I kind of branched off on my own, and I was just open to whatever opportunities would land my way. But part of that was at the time in the, like, talking about Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion, WAP was a major anthem in the pandemic.
We need to get into this.
Yeah. You have to tell the world basically, about this. The way my freelance career started is I made a deck about Cardi B's WAP, and I posted it on LinkedIn. And that just opened up all these introductions. Some of my best friends in London I met on LinkedIn through this WAP deck. And
love that.
It's kept me gainfully employed for 4 years. And so I highly recommend, like, if you have an idea or observation about anything in culture, find the format that speaks to you, which for me tends to be decks, and put it out in the world and see where that will lead you, because I've made so many relationships simply by just creating the work that I wanted to. That's kind of how I ended up here.
Can you talk us through the, like, WAP insight? Like, how did that happen? Like,
So, I mean, how did it happen? The song was everywhere at a time in which we had all these, like, really interesting conversations about Black experiences and womanhood. And you know, Black Americans were dying at a higher rate in the States from COVID-19 than other populations. And yet, like, the media felt really focused on this, like, raunchy rap song. Mm. And when you look at the lyrics, it's no different than any other rap song that a man had been releasing for years.
Yeah.
The court
but it was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a woman talking about her sexual desires and needs. Like, heaven forbid. Yeah.
I'd say the men sound a lot worse.
Yeah. And so, like, I saw a lot of, like, conservative politicians in the States talking about how it had brought feminism backwards, and yet I saw it completely differently. Like, Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion had also, like, released a bunch of $1,000 grants, like, literally investing in a future generation. And my favorite part of my report was that I had coined the term weapons of mass defense because young women were standing.
It's literally amazing.
They were standing outside of reproductive health centers and to kind of combat the, like, negative energy of religious protesters that were trying to make women and people with reproductive capabilities uncomfortable or, like, challenge their decision as they're pursuing something like potentially an abortion at whatever they are going to the reproductive health center for. These other women, they used it as a song of protest, and they made all these, like, men uncomfortable with the song. And so I just felt like it was political and impactful, and, like, I knew where I was working at the time would never let me release a piece like that. And so kind of just to, like, piss them off and, like, make my mark, I put it out into the world. Insights are everywhere.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that I've definitely learned over the years as well is I think there's this, like, little – there's an idea or a preconceived notion about, like, what an insight is and what makes an insight, but it's like you can literally find they are everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you have one experience, you can call that an insight because there's going to be a shared experience in that. And that's what I find really interesting about it.
I think, like, one of the most boring tropes of this industry is, like, listening to two strategists debate what is and isn't an insight. Like, if it's like
a
sticky thought starter, like, then, like, it's an insight. If it's a compelling universal truth or, like, teaches you about people, it's an insight.
Yeah. And you do a lot of, like, ethnographic research. How do you find explaining what that is to people that have no idea what ethnographic
is? Like, really dumb here. I don't understand what that means.
This is a safe space.
It is a safe space.
Can you please explain it?
Yeah. I mean, I learned it through Paul Lawton because he has a background in sociology and anthropology. But ethnography is simply immersing yourself in the culture of whatever it is you're trying to study.
Okay.
And all research is kind of bias driven. So, like, I'm an outsider in a lot of these places. But I was labeling myself as a digital ethnographer because I'm deeply passionate about our relationship to the internet. It's very personal. It's very telling. It's very intimate. And I'm immersing myself in the digital communities and cultures that I'm trying to understand. So I'm in a lot of Facebooks I don't belong in. I have no business being in. Like, there was a chapter I was in a pandemic puppy support group, Facebook group. I've been in a lot of, like, Canadian mommy Facebook groups.
They're that really interesting.
Yeah.
Like Mum's Net.
Yeah.
Because it can be quite toxic.
In yeah.
It. Yeah, I bet.
Well, I think, like, the internet at large is both, like, a utopia and a dystopia. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much to learn. Like, my favorite place to be on the internet is Reddit. Like, when I meet someone, like, I want to know what you guys, like, your search history is.
Reddit,
like,
is an interesting place. I think Reddit used to be, I mean, it still is a pretty rough place.
Yeah.
If you go into the deep depths of it. But a lot of the stuff that was really bad has kind of been, like, removed now, I think. It's just a little bit more, like,
PG.
So there's a lot of moderation that's happening.
A lot of moderation, yeah, of course. But, Reddit, you can also find answers quicker than going and getting all this faff on Google, where people are paying to get all this SEO kind of search and implemented. But when really, it's like you can go on Reddit and someone could just be like, yeah, it's this. This is the answer.
Yeah.
And you're like, thank you.
Yeah.
That saved me 20 minutes.
And also you can spiral in subreddits, right? God. Like, I think anytime you're using the internet as, like, a research tool, you should be very critical about, like, who is posting this.
He's
like
posting,
what is the benefit of them, like, sharing this? But I love Reddit. I love subreddits. Like, I just want to know what everyone's looking at. For a while, my approach to, like, dating was, like, I wanted to know what the subreddits that the men were looking at. I'm like, this is insightful.
It should be a question on him.
Yeah, it should. Tell me about your favorite subreddit.
Yeah, really good category.
Love that. We just said love that at the same time.
I know, that was pretty so cute.
In terms of insights, so you have your own insights platform called Closing My Tabs. Please tell us about it. How did it come about?
Well, so I had this dream to start my own podcast for, like, 5 years, and I finally did. It's called Send Me the Link. Mm-hmm. And all of the social handles were taken. Okay. So I had to come up with, like, a new moniker. And as much as I love my last name, it's kind of a blocker in a lot of ways because people don't know how to say it. It's not like the most ideal name for a brand. And so I decided to call my freelancing business Closing My Tabs because I loved learning about people online. And a lot of times, like the roles I was in agencies, they would put me on these social listening platforms that would use APIs to pull from Twitter. And I just felt like agencies were spending so much money on these tools that were like not useful. Mm. Where if I just immersed myself in the world of my target and I was looking at the world through a screen the way they were, I could learn so much about who they are and what they're doing. And so like screenshots are like my favorite artifact. My like iCloud folder is like constantly overfilling. And Closing My Tabs was just a reflection of how I was using the internet as like a research tool.
Yeah. Nice. I think we've all got some tabs that we should probably close.
Yeah. I am the queen of having a stupid amount of tabs.
Yeah. Ellie's frame is stressful to look at.
I know.
Yeah. I'm really organized. Like my room is always like spick and span clean, but my mind is really chaotic. Same. And I feel like my laptop is a reflection of my mind.
Same. It's really chaotic. There's like this one video a former colleague of mine has of me from like 6 years ago, and it's my computer desktop. And there's so many screenshots that it's like layered four rows.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was horrified.
It's practically coming out of the screen.
You can't even see the little logo that basically tells you what the tab is. So you're just guessing.
One of the hardest things is like literally closing all of them. And I did something super rogue when I moved here. I bought a new computer.
Nelski, I want to know why you came to London.
So many reasons. I think the first one is Toronto's my hometown.
Yeah.
I never lived anywhere else. It was always a dream to go move to another city. And London was calling me over like the last year. A lot of my good friends moved out here. Mm-hmm. And I started coming again in like June 2022, and I just found it so expansive and stimulating. And anytime I like leave the house, I feel like I'm getting this like new experience and meeting really interesting people. And I found for someone like me, Toronto to be like limiting in my opportunities. So I came to London to start a ruckus and, you know.
Here you are.
To like as do some should. Fun stuff and as challenge creativity and strategy and branding. And
yeah. What's some of your highlights been since being here?
Honestly, like every day's an adventure. I love how lush the city is. Like just the greenery.
Define lush. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm like greenery.
What does lush mean?
Like lush is like luscious, like sort of.
Yeah, it does mean greenery as well.
Okay, in terms of like nature. Or Yeah.
I like one of my favorite things to do is like say hi to all the trees. Like your trees are so old and like mystical.
To be fair, we have a lot of trees. I think we just look past them, but they are literally everywhere.
But that's what I mean. Like living in Toronto for my whole life, I like started to have like a distaste for it or like I just was like desensitized to its beauty. But whenever someone like travels to Toronto, they're like, this is the most 100%. Amazing city, this is so cool. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
So it's the novelty. What are my London highlights? And I just like meeting people and like meeting you guys in person finally being here.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like it's a big thing to move somewhere full time. Mm-hmm. And what was the main reason? So I think we might have touched on it before.
It was every reason. I felt like Toronto, I couldn't grow anymore personally and professionally.
Yeah.
And so it just felt like it was a matter of time of changing my environment.
Mm. God. I think it's something we should all do.
Yeah.
Just change your environment.
It's so true. Like just talking about London being lush, I'm like, it probably is lush, but we're just so used to it. Like every time I go home and see my dad in the country, I'm like, oh my God, it's so green, like cows, trees, but there is greenery and it is luscious.
I think one day, like we should each pick a day. And like, you do your ideal London day, you do your
ideal London day.
Love because that. Like another thing that I love about this city is that I think there's so many ways to experience it.
So many ways.
I've spent a lot of time in East London, and like I know that's not the center of the universe. There's like more.
Sometimes it does feel like.
Yeah, it really does. You become so just like only institutionalized by East London.
Yeah,
it's kind of scary.
Explore and like see all the different like cuts of life and the way you can.
One day, like, you should go to West.
Yeah, your day in West. A day in West will be so different to a day in East. A day in North will be quite different, but like there's also so many like sounds a bit dodgy but back alleys, like really old little alleys that lead out into these like streets that you had no idea existed. It's just like such an old city.
Yeah,
nooks and crannies,
so much to discover.
We need to plan that. That'd be fun.
Definitely.
But yeah, and I guess that when it comes to working on brands and you wanted to make like, you know, cause a ruckus with creativity and stuff, like what is it that you want to do for brands and help brands do with your work?
So I think for me, like, I'm one of those people in this industry that doesn't always like think about the brands. Like I think about the people and the culture, and like culture is like, I feel like the new C word where like what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Like it's like kind of like everyone's using it, but like to me, culture is shared meaning and shared language. It's a way to like symbolize connection and community. And so I feel like brands have a lot of opportunities to help people connect right now, and also can make like a really big impact in the way that the future is designed. So I want to see brands like collaborate with people who have like legitimate credibility in a space, like have a legitimate connection, a genuine relationship to whatever it is that we're trying to service or create a product for, and put things out into the world that are like meaningful. And I know meaningful is also quite a lofty word, and
it's like purpose, well, meaningful, culture.
It's subjective, isn't it, sometimes, because everyone's something means something different to everyone else. And I think we're at risk of turning culture into a buzzword.
Yeah.
But it's just about making sure that that's serviced properly, and like it's actually not just thrown around for the sake of throwing it around.
Like,
you know?
I don't think culture is like solely fashion brands, for example. Yeah. Like I had the chance to work for this physiotherapy brand called Myo Detox and help them position their pelvic health service back in Canada. Wow. And so I got to talk to a lot of women who had experienced pregnancy. And like the first insight for me was that like pelvic health is not directly tied to pregnancy. We all have pelvic floors. Mm-hmm. None of us know what our pelvic floors do. Mm. And especially with men, the older they get, the more that they need to be aware of their pelvic health. And so like that to me is a culture. I learned about the culture of women's medicine, the culture of pregnancy, a lot of stuff about like partnership came up in that, a lot of things about sex and sexual health came up. And those are all cultures, right? Like those are all communities, and there's like so much to learn from all of them. And that's completely different from like some like hype beastie thing.
Yeah, it's true. Are there any other like, I guess, like-minded or similar brands within, maybe within fashion, maybe outside of fashion, which are really meaningful to you and you would like love to work with them or do stuff
like that? I think I'm game for anything.
Love
like
that.
The reason I got into research is because I love learning. I love talking. I love listening. And so there are like a lot of brands that are doing great things, but like I'm the type of person that like it doesn't like come to mind immediately for me. Like the other day you and I were talking, I was like, I think advertising is giving me the ick. And you were like, oh, tell me more. And I was like, I don't know. So I just started sending you things.
The Marc Jacobs Teletubbies collab.
I was literally going to ask, like, what's your worst brand collaboration you've seen? And I think that might be touching on.
I think it's up there for me. Possibly.
Like, who is that for? Because the people I know that wear those Marc Jacobs tote bags, I don't think they are like Teletubby enthusiasts. No. I don't think that's a nostalgia play.
For context, there was was it on TikTok or something like that? A campaign of Teletubbies wearing like Marc Jacobs bags, and it was all like ethereal and
trippy.
Yeah. I was like, I feel like I'm tripping right now. But then you made a really good point of like, I don't understand what the connection is. Like, it's obviously, is that when it comes into like clickbaity, shareable content?
It's just so wild and out there and far-fetched that people are just like,
okay. Because that to me isn't culture.
No. And like, we're so overstimulated. Like, I'm tired of things like that. Mm. Like, the other one I thought about when I first read this question was there's like a Pringles Crocs collab. And like, basically it's like you ping a Pringles canister on your Crocs. And like, who's wearing that? Like, who is that for? Like, it's funny. Yes. That made me like stop in my feed, but like, that's not persuading me to buy Pringles or Crocs.
Fair enough. The phone cases where you can put like your hot sauce or whatever, or like your lip gloss. I mean, like, that's practical.
Rode. Like, she's done her team has done an amazing job with that.
Yeah. But then like the Heinz version of like, that's compelling.
You're playing on, playing on culture.
Exactly. That's like someone is studying the world around them and creating like thoughtfully and intentionally in that moment versus because like
that's entirely it, isn't it? It's like the brand Rode created a phone case where you could fit your lip gloss into it. I'm just giving a breakdown in case people don't know what we're talking about. But that's obviously become a huge thing in like the beauty community because that's not actually been done before. It's very innovative and
yeah.
it's obviously like, you know, brand marketing, but then Heinz jumped on it and put a packet of Heinz in your phone case. And you think some people just need some ketchup.
Yeah, totally.
But they're playing on that. And Heinz is such a huge legacy brand. And I kind of like it when you see a big brand play on culture in the right way.
Yeah.
And you like, especially a legacy brand, like an old school brand.
It's smart.
It's smart. And you're like, oh, there are actually people who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm. Sat in that office, recognizing culture.
Definitely. I feel like Heinz, like, surprisingly, has consistently been fun. Yeah.
They're doing a lot of their stuff execution. Recently.
Yeah. Mm.
100%.
In terms of maybe not brands, but is there a human or a client or an organization that you would absolutely love to work with?
So right now I'm really drawn to themes around womanhood. So any like brand, product or service that is like trying to support and understand women at an intersectional level, I'm game for, I'm open to. Like, I don't want that to be perceived as like also these stereotypical brands that like women use, of like beauty brands or fragrance brands or fashion brands.
Yeah.
Also right now my like dream project is like, I want to interview men. I want to do in-depth interviews with like men of all ages, backgrounds, sexual orientations of like 45 minutes, very loosely guided, and then like sit down with a team of people and like just see what the insights are. Mm. Because I think that there's like so much to like learn and be studied and like expand the concept of masculinity. Like I could only like what would come up in that conversation of like insight analysis.
Yeah. And like seeing if there was like a lot of the, I mean, everyone has shared experiences, but specifically men of different backgrounds, what their experiences are around masculinity.
Yeah.
Of like being their true selves.
Because the boys are not okay.
No, they're not.
Like, I mean, no one's okay, but like,
boys, are you okay?
And like, I'm kind of like tired of being like a lot of people's emotional support system. So if we can get some like brand capital to support this initiative. Yeah. Like, thinking about brands that are doing interesting work. So everything is novel for me here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my algorithms are changing. And for the last, I'd say like 12 months, I've seen a lot of interesting work come out from Lad Bible, which I feel like
that's completely transformed over the years.
Well, it used to be quite like, it's like cross the word? Like quite like,
ugh. Yeah,
like it was bro-y. The side,
I'm assuming it's like the like UK stuff. Version of Barstool.
Yeah.
But like they have been doing a lot of campaigns around like educating men on how to be a support system to women at nighttime, like in terms of like harassment and safety.
Okay, cool.
And like flipping the narrative of like women need to protect themselves to like men, we are also, not like men in this context being like men, we are also responsible for communicating and supporting and making sure that everyone feels safe.
Yeah. So
like a call in, call out culture. That's type cool. of thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Are there any other brands that are doing that?
I mean, I'm other brands.
Not that I've seen.
Like combating toxic masculinity.
Yeah. I mean, the government's tried a few times, which has been a little
bless
bit.
Them.
God bless them.
Keep going, girl.
They've released a couple of campaigns. One of them was like about calling your friends out, basically aimed at men to call their friends out for being like inappropriate with women. Or, and they did this campaign called Just Say Mate.
Yeah.
And it's encouraged to be like, mate. And it was like, it didn't land very well, but that's just the government for you.
Yeah. But like, okay, so in that scenario, like I think with advertising, marketing and branding,
the government.
Like I want to be like in the meeting room. Like, how did this?
They need people like you.
Yeah. Like, who, but like, I want to be a fly on the wall though. Like, who pitched this idea?
Yeah.
Like, what was their intention?
And they're like, oh, this is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Every room's like, that's it, guys. Yeah. Money.
Roll it. Yeah. Roll it. We've done it.
Oh, so funny. Speaking of the failed government women safety campaigns, are there any other brands that you think have really missed the mark on their kind of strategy / like cultural outputs?
Okay, so this is tough because as fun as it is to like shit talk about like other people's work, like also like I've been in the room.
Yeah.
And I know how hard it is. So like my answer here is like just like a catch-all of like any International Women's Day campaign. Gives me the ick.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically when it's like a confectionery, like chocolate brand. Like I bought a Galaxy bar and it said, empower her. And I was like, yes, you're about to. Like Hershey every year like releases these like bars with like The packaging is designed by women, and I'm just like, this doesn't need to be a marketing moment.
Yeah.
Like, if this is a group that you are passionate about supporting or selling your stuff to, like, have an initiative year round. Don't like try and make it. I'm just like tired of like these campaign days.
Yeah.
And especially working on International Women's Day initiatives, like the amount of times I've been censored and edited, I'm like, this is ironic.
Oh, yes, totally.
That's crazy.
Do you remember?
Is it though?
I mean, not really, but like it's just like it's laughable, really, isn't it? Because it's so vapid and
like why try?
Yeah, yeah. Same with Pride Month.
We should start a trend on international
pride washing.
We should do a hashtag ick on every single International Women's Day post.
International Ick Day.
Do you remember Soho House? They were giving out free rosé on International
Women's Day. Oh, wow. Day. Just what every woman needs. Yeah, you know?
Personally, I wasn't complaining. Glasses deep, and then Ellie was like, don't you think it's a bit silly that they're giving out rosé just because it's International Women's Day? And I was like, oh, yeah.
It's like, guys, this is the answer. Thank you for listening.
I just wanted to say, on the pride washing thing as well, because that's another good point, because I mean, that lasts for a month. But like, if you look at brands like Skittles, mm-hmm. I don't know why this just popped into my head. I'm not sure if they did it in Canada. The whole thing with Skittles is like, Taste the Rainbow?
Yeah, it is.
And they removed all the colouring off their packets in the UK. Mm-hmm. And they have white packets of
White Skittles.
But I think the Skittles are still...
What flavor would that be?
I think they're still colorful.
What is that saying? There's this one ad I remember, a billboard in Toronto in like the Village, which is like one of our queer neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And it was a drag queen. And it was like, smile with pride. And I was like, was there any gay person on this project?
Yeah.
It was like, drag queens are not like the sole representation of queerness.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also like... have people who are like actually representative of the culture that you're trying to connect with on your team, but also like pay them handsomely and don't necessarily see them as like the educator for what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah.
It's like a very fine line, and I think we're getting better at navigating it. But again, like certain things should not be seen as like brand moments.
We're getting better at calling things out as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard for a brand to not fuck up.
Beep.
Yeah. Somebody beep me.
Speaking of like diversity and inclusion, what do you think agencies or brands can do to like build more diverse teams?
Well, like, okay, so I think about the word diversity all the time, because like, what does it mean? Like, I remember the first time someone called me diverse and I was like, oh, okay, like I didn't know I was like, it was and, like a disconnect. And like diversity really just means a range of experiences, identities, orientations, and so like don't hire lookalikes. Right. And if you want to have diversity, acknowledge and allow them to approach things differently. There's been a lot of challenges in my career because I grew up in an Iranian household, so the way that I communicate is from a different culture. I'm not trying to be like a conflicting person, but I come from a very passionate and vocal group of people. And so be okay with the fact that if you're going to hire a diverse range of individuals, they're going to bring forward a different approach.
Yeah.
And just like, I think, you know, a lot of the frustrations I have with this industry is that they try to make people like box shaped instead of watering them like a plant and allowing them to grow. And it's just like, I think just,
yeah, well, it's also like just agency structure, like as a strategist, as a creative strategist, as a trends forecaster, like you don't fit into one box.
No.
But there's not really, there are some agencies that are really accommodating of that, like this kind of hybrid approach. But a lot of the traditional structures and models don't allow for you to like do different things.
Exactly.
And I think that's what also impacts diversity, because you're kind of bringing in from different perspectives and backgrounds and, you know, having a different range of experiences, but not giving them the place to, you know, move around, you know?
Like pre-pandemic, so many different people made me feel crazy for like my love of the internet and studying it and bringing screenshots forward as like the insight. And then post-pandemic, because we spent so much time online and the internet permeated our lives like even further than it had before, there's more of a receptiveness to it. But yeah, I've had a hard time fitting in places because like I do what I want, how I want, what I want.
As you should.
With respect, I must add. You know, like I'm all for supporting my team and creating for culture. A brand is simply just like the catalyst to do that.
100%. And you need to have the space to be able to actually flex those, I guess, like future thinking muscles as well. In terms of like trend forecasting, because this is something I only learned about over the last couple of years, How do you go about forecasting trends? And is it like a cycle that comes back round? Yeah.
Like you open up your laptop, yeah. You're trend forecasting, what are you doing?
So my trend forecasting is primarily on my phone. And I'm just navigating different corners of the internet. I'm on Twitter, X, or Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. The comment section is like where I thrive. And I just start pulling signals. So those are like clues of like little behavior. So like the reason that I'm really drawn to womanhood is throughout the pandemic, I've had the chance to witness different expressions of the female and like a woman's experience of life. And so then every maybe couple of weeks I'll sit on my like in my room and like I'll pull the screenshots. Sometimes I'll even print them out and I'll start like putting them on a board or a mural board and seeing
like a investigative crime.
The whole Kendrick Drake beef.
Yeah.
So like one of the observations I have about that is that like we are really thirsty for a monocultural event, like all hyper fixate on the same thing and dissect it and talk about it and show our knowledge and show like what side we're on. But also there's like in one of Kendrick's diss tracks, he like says to like the Drake, like, I hate the way you talk. I hate the way you walk. And I saw...
it's a trend now on TikTok.
Yeah, it's a trend on TikTok. And it's such a compelling... There's so much insight in, like, witnessing the way people use that trend to communicate whatever it is they're trying to communicate. And I saw a creator by the name of Allegra Shaw, and she wrote, me on my period, to myself. And that, to me, is so insightful. Like, I don't know if we're going to keep this in the podcast recording, but my alarm went off because it was time for my antidepressant.
I mean, we could just leave it in because I feel like it's organic.
Yeah, it is.
I just moved to London recently, and I found myself telling a lot of people that I'm on antidepressants, like, with joy, because it was such a solution for me. And my depression is, unfortunately, societal. Like, so some of it is, like, beyond my ability to kind of resolve or, like... kind of like rectify, but a part of it is also the fact that I'm 32 years old and my body wants to produce a baby and I don't know if I want to do that. And so every month I'm four different people and my estrogen levels like peak and dip.
Yeah.
And so the SSRI is actually just helping me like level balance. Out.
Yeah.
And like there's nothing like wrong about that, but like for 3 years there was this stigma for me. So I would spend my winters like sobbing and being miserable and a dementor, and like now I'm like happy to tell people because it was so helpful for me. Yeah. And I was like holistically gaslighting myself. I got like deep into spirituality.
Yeah.
I had a therapist. I was like microdosing mushrooms. Like I refused to go the SSRI route.
You didn't want
to
like give in to it.
Yeah.
And really.
That like intersection of like society versus your biology is really interesting. And I think like we were actually talking about this at work recently. It's changing, right? Like people aren't really considering marriage in the same way as before. People are having babies much later. People aren't having babies at all. Yet our kind of innate biological body is saying no now.
Yeah, it's expecting it to happen. And like it's the whole biological clock, right?
Yeah.
Like, you are supposed to have had a baby by this time. And it's,
there
was actually on the One Show, which is like an evening.
Thank you.
It's like an evening show. It's very family friendly.
You
talk about like,
quite boring. Like
British culture and stuff. Yeah. What's going on in the week?
Like Girls Louder on there.
Yeah. Like reunion. Someone comes on and sings a song. They actually had like a segment last night and I was watching it and it was about women freezing their eggs and kind of like the science behind it and how there's like a lot of single women now going and paying out, like, you know, there was a woman there saying like, I'm on an average salary, but I am putting money aside to freeze my egg.
Yeah.
She was like 33 or 34. Mm. And I was like, it's so crazy that women are just doing this like on their own now.
Well, because from a young age, we are taught that we have an expiry date.
Yeah.
And so I was one of those that I was 28 when the pandemic started. And I remember telling my therapist, like, I'm single by the time this thing ends, like I'm going to be 30, then we have a geriatric pregnancy. Here we are.
Lock on.
But I was saving money to have to freeze my eggs. And I was like, I don't have a partner. This is also like an invasive surgery.
It's
like
intense.
It's government subsidized in Canada, but it's still expensive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then I thought, I was like, you know what? If like life has that vision for me, we'll get there when we get there. And like women are having healthy babies later in life. Like all
it's
the
like
time.
It's like evolution.
Yeah. Kind
of. Like we've become, our bodies are becoming used to not expecting to have a baby.
And I wonder if that will change in like hundreds and hundreds of years time. We won't start actually.
I mean, if we're still walking on this earth,
what do you mean?
State of climate.
Malski, I actually wanted to ask, when you're talking about your trend forecasting and kind of finding signals, has what's been that one alarming expression or signal that you found and it's been really hard to kind of get your head around or see? I'm sure there's quite a lot.
There's a lot. I think like on the vein of what we were just talking about, like mental health on a shelf.
Yeah.
Like we don't have time, or like even up until this point in culture, there wasn't really a safe space to talk about the fact that like it's tough up here and like life, regardless of who you are and what body you are, it is really hard to be alive.
Yeah.
And so I think like that is like I see all of these signals of like people struggling, especially on a platform like TikTok. There was this core movement. Did you guys come across that?
Yeah.
So it was like, think of it as like a very overstimulated, like mixed media, like memes over like trending audios and then like clips of destruction and climate change and consumerism. Mm. And that to me just felt like such a reflection of like the zeitgeist of like what we're all feeling. Like I think even right now, it's such a difficult time to be hyper aware of what our world looks like. And so like we're worried about the climate change, we're worried about like the multiple wars that are happening, and like, there's like genocides, and so there's a lot of work I think that can be done to normalize conversations around mental health and also like expand the fact that those conversations look different for segments like us and then segments like my dad is like a 60-year-old Middle Eastern man, and he would never talk about his feelings, but like if he did, I think things would be better for him.
I mean, I could say the same about my dad. I'm like, your life would be a lot easier if you actually...
I'd like to drag my dad by the ear and take him to a therapist.
I just most daughters would.
I don't want to put my beautiful brother on blast. I really hope he doesn't listen to this. He's so supportive of me that he might. But I'd learned that he refuses to see a therapist that's not a man.
And really?
And for a couple's therapist.
Right.
And he also was like, I don't think I need therapy. Like, I'll go because I love you, but I don't need therapy. I was like, anyone who says that might need therapy.
He wants it to be a man.
Yeah.
See, I want my therapist to be a woman.
So. And I can understand.
Experience, I guess. Yeah. But with couples, I guess it's like, I don't know. It's a bit more like
you want someone who can like speak to your experience for sure. But like the refusal to even like entertain therapy for yourself.
Give it a try.
It's like, dude, I'm like witnessing like your high stress and anxiety as you enter fatherhood and like start your own business. Like you're having these like light tantrums and I want to support you, but like also not my job. Like I'm your little sister.
Yeah.
Love you, bro.
Love you.
I had a question which I'd love you to answer. Bit of a segue, but why do you think so many people are now commodifying research and starting their own agencies?
I think part of it is like the agency model is a little outdated.
Yeah.
The concept of like an AOR is kind of gone.
Yeah,
yeah.
And there's also like a shift in how we're advertising. Like we've talked a lot about like big culture and micro culture, and a lot of these research shops are starting because they are speaking to and studying and representing niche and smaller, more intimate communities than like the mass general group. And then I think they're symptomatic of our industry needing to evolve.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what happens. It's like a wild time in like so many ways, but like a wild time to be in advertising.
I definitely
saw this TikTok, which is again my primary research tool. And it was talking about how Gen Z doesn't use Google anymore. They use TikTok and Instagram.
As a search function, it's crazy.
Yeah. And so like that to me is so fascinating because you don't need to do paid social all the time.
Yeah.
You need to do things that people will post on those platforms or talk about with their friends or bring to the event. But as someone who's like worked in this industry, it's like we're like always trying to understand the platform and the algorithm. And like sometimes I find like things are evolving so fast that it's hard for the marketers to keep up. Like I have so much empathy for people in our industry because it's an exhausting job and it's a fun job, but I feel like we don't get enough credit for how like overstimulating and draining it can be. Like there are so many like insight crises and like like clients like midnight are like, this campaign hasn't launched. And it's like, is it the end of the world? No.
Yeah.
But I know it feels that way.
Yeah. And what about I guess people pay for insights, right? Mm-hmm. Like brands will pay so much money just to understand their audiences and where they can really tap into markets. Like, why do you think they are so, I guess, they're actually putting money aside now to pay researchers like yourself? Like, why do you think that's changed?
I think that understanding that, like, you need to have your feet on the ground to understand your target.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, a bit more respect and empathy for the person that we're trying to sell to.
I also think strategy is just so much more valued than it used to be.
Mm. It is here.
Yeah,
like
really.
Back home, it's like the amount of insights I've had to retrofit for the creative idea. I'm like, I don't
really.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting how it changes like across the pond.
Yeah. Across the pond.
Well, I think like the UK was our blueprint, but like we didn't like copy the homework well enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Still got a bit of way to go.
Yeah.
If there's one thing you could change about the industry, everything. What would it be?
I think two things. Like, let's not fetishize visibility metrics. Mm. There's like so much power and intimacy and word of mouth and genuine connection. And then the second is like, if you are creating for a marginalized community, it's with us, by us, not for us. Have those people at your boardroom, like on your team. Yeah. Have them collaborate. They want to. And also compensate them.
Yeah.
Like, nothing should be for free.
Yeah. God forbid people get paid for stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, dare they? Malski, you've been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Honored to be here. Finally to meet you in person.
I know. Yay. Honestly. And this has gone so quickly as well.
I know. I feel like I'm out with my friends.
Yeah, we could have done this for so much longer.
I can come back.
Yeah. We could do a 2.0.
Okay, yeah. Perfect.
Love it.
Thanks
for an update on my London life.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so
much. Thanks, guys.